Today's daf is daf nun dalet. We're going to pick up on daf nun dalet amud aleph, four lines down where we left off yesterday. So last three words on the line. Yosef, Rav Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta kamed Rav Nachman. That Rav Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta was sitting in front of Rav Nachman. But Yosef v'kamar, and he was saying the following. Drusa sha'amru tzricha bedika kineged bnei ma'ayim. So this is actually something we saw yesterday, but the idea is that Drusa, we've been talking about this idea of the animal claws another animal, and it has this element of poison in it. So if there would be such a clawing, so then you need to check to make sure to see whether in fact there was poison, which you would do. We discussed yesterday a little bit whether it's inside the animal or outside the animal, but you'd be looking for some red marks that would indicate, or some marks that would indicate the presence of this poison. So the question is, where is the area that you need to check within the animal to be concerned that the poison might be there? And obviously we discussed yesterday the idea, the concern is that the poison will in turn cause a hole or other injury to one of the organs that would make the animal into a trefa. So you need to check it. So this Gemara is saying that you need to check opposite from the b'nei ma'ayin. Now, I mentioned yesterday, in traditional fashion, we think of the b'nei ma'ayim as the stomach, but Rashi understands it to be broader than that, so it's talking about the entire, I think what we would call the abdominal cavity and the thoracic cavity, so like the not only just the entire stomach area, but also the lungs and liver and things of that nature. I alluded to this yesterday, but we didn't get involved in the detail. Tosas understands this to be a much more limited space. This would be basically the keres, which is the rumen, which we've been talking about for a while, which is where when the animal eats it, the first of the stomachs that it goes to, as well as the intestines. But it's basically the latter part of the animal. It would exclude pretty much a lot of what's in the rib cage and etc. We'll see how that comes into play in a moment. So, but basically, Rav Yitzchak bar Shmuel was sitting in front of Rav Nachman, and he said that when you need to inspect for this marks that would indicate poison, you need to check kineged bnei ma'ayim. And again, Rashi says that's a broader area, Tosfos says it's a more narrow area. To which Rav Nachman said back, Halakim, by the name of God, Mori ba Rav mikafa v'ad atma, that Rav would rule from a much larger, where much larger expanse across the animal. So from the kafa, a kaf is generally a spoon or a bowl, ad atma, until the atma at least is easy. The atma is talking about the thigh, the back of the animal, and that's, above where the legs of the animal are. So that's obviously where the thigh is. That's the back point, but it says from there till the kaf. So the Gemara says, my kafa, what does that mean when it says the kafa that Rav used to make them check all the way to the kaf? Ilema kafa di yaday, if you're telling me that it's the kaf, the spoon of the hand, which Rashi says, the hainu etzem rechava shel kasef, this is the wide bone of the shoulder. So basically the shoulder bone and the shoulder blade is a fairly wide, area. So we say, Hainu kineged, and I'll tell you in a second, we know it's wide. Hainu kineged b'nei ma'ayim. So that's, so the Gemara asks a question. If what you're telling me is from the thigh till the end of the shoulder blade, and we'll talk about it in a second what end. So then the Gemara asks, Hainu kineged b'nei ma'ayim. That's the same as the b'nei ma'ayim, as what we've been discussing. Now, according to Rashi, this is very easy to understand because it goes from the thigh all the way till the front edge of the shoulder blade, which is really including everything in there other than really the simanim. However, according to Tosos, who says that the b'nei ma'ayim is really only a smaller area, that's the keres and the intestines, so then the question is, how is b'nei ma'ayim the same as going all the way to the shoulder blade? To which Tosos explains that the shoulder blade is a reference to the beginning of the shoulder blade. As Rashi referenced, it's a fairly wide bone, so it would go from the thigh to the beginning of the shoulder blade, and that would match Tosos' definition of b'nei ma'ayim. According to Rashi, it's going from the thigh all the way to the front end of the shoulder blade, which covers the lungs and the liver and all of those things. So the Gemara is basically asking, however you define b'nei ma'ayim, this seems to be from the thigh to the shoulder blade seems to be covering the same area. So what are you saying when you're saying Rav covered more ground? If the ground he covered is till the shoulder blade, it's the same as B'nai Ma'ayim. So the Gemara says, rather, when it says Rav went from the thigh all the way to the calf, Ela mikafa de mocha ad atma, that he went from the spoon, or in this case it probably is the bowl of the brain, until the thigh. So what is this picking up? If you go as far as the brain of the animal, it's picking up really the simanim. So the idea was Rav was saying, not only do you need to check the entire B'nai Ma'ayim, you also need to go as far as including the simanim. Now obviously according to Tosos, you would cover the same, you're, at the end of the day, you're covering the same thing from the thigh all the way through to the edge of the brain. The difference is how far are you jumping? According to Tosfos, you're jumping from a relatively small thing that Rav included a lot more, and according to Rashi, Rav included something more, which is to include the simanim. Now, the truth is, I believe that yesterday, Ilfa asked whether you need a drusa, you need a check for the simanim, and we said Rav Chanan bar Rava says, that drusa shamar tzricha b'dika kenag beis achol kulav afilu b'simanim, and also the simanim. So I think what we're quoting from Rav is actually, it seems to me to be consistent with what we said yesterday in the name of Rav Chanan bar Rava. But, I'm sorry, it's actually, so that seems to be consistent. Okay, so, Kisalak Rav Chiya bar Yosef. Rav Chiya bar Yosef went from, he left Bavel and he went up to Eretz Yisrael. Ashkechinu l'Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish v'yasvi v'kamri. So he found Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish were sitting there and discussing this topic, and they were saying, Drusa sha'amru tzricha bedika keneged b'nei ma'ayim. He said that when you have an animal that was swiped or clawed, that you need to check opposite from the b'nei ma'ayim, however you want to understand that, but obviously less than the amount that Rav said you need to cover. So Amr Lahu, so Rav Chiya bar Yosef had just come from Bavel, and he said to them, Ho'elakim, by the name of Hashem, or by God, Moru barav mikafa v'aratma. He said, Rav said, all the way from the calf until the thigh, which goes from the thigh all the way till the edge of the brain, which includes even the simanim. So why are you saying that you only have to check the b'nei ma'ayim? So Amr Le Reish Lakish. So Reish Lakish said to Rav Chiya bar Yosef, he says, Manu Rav v'lo yadanale. I'm hearing all about this Rav guy. I don't know him. You're quoting me, Rav. Who is he? I'm Rav Yochanan. So Rav Yochanan said to Reish Lakish, not Rav Chiya bar Yosef, Rav Yochanan said to Reish Lakish, V'lanihir leila osa Talmud, don't you remember that Talmud? Shashimesh is Rebbe Rabba, who served Rebbe, the great one, which I guess is a reference to Rav Yudha Nasi, Rav Chiya and Rav Chiya, that he was this Talmud that served them. V'halakim, and by God, kol oson shanim shashimesh oso Talmud b'yeshiva, Anisha Mashdi Bamido, that I was standing. So, Rav Yochanan said, don't you remember him? He was the one that used to serve Rebbe and Rav Chiya, and that all those years that he was a Talmud in the Yeshiva, I, Rav Yochanan, would be standing, and he, Rav, would be sitting. As Rashi explains that, basically this takes backbenching to a new level. You have the sitters, you have the people in the back, and then the people who are even further back or less, accomplished would be standing, standing room only. So basically, Rav Yochanan was saying, I was a standing room guy. Rav was ahead of me. He was a seated guy. So don't you remember him? He says to Reish Lakish, Uman Gavarhu Gavar Bakula. What's he great in? He's great in everything. Rashi says, this Rabbi Silver would have fun with, but the Litvak of me doesn't, says, B'toro v'chassidus. That was his, he was an expert in Torah and Chassidus. But in any event, he's saying, don't you remember Rav, this great Rav? Miad Pasach Reish Lakish, immediately Reish Lakish remembered and he opened and he said, V'amar, and he said, Baram for certain, Zachar Oso Ha'ish Latov, I remember that person Rav for good, because Rav, in case it's not evident, had been living in Eretz Yisrael and then he went to Bavel. So they were referencing back that they remembered him from his earlier days in Eretz Yisrael. And how did Reish Lakish remember him? He says he was the one Shamru Shmua Mipiv, that they said a saying in his name, that what Shmuta Ushechuta Kshera. So he says that if you find an animal that the esophagus, that the veshet is both dislodged from the jaw where it's put, and it's also shechted, that that animal is kosher. So now the real question is as follows. If the esophagus is disconnected from the jaw, it's for sure, it's either a trefa or it's a nevela, but it's for sure no good. It's not kosher. So the question here is as follows. If you come and you find, after you shecht the animal, that it's shechted, meaning that the esophagus is cut like regular shechita, but it was also disconnected from the jaw. So the question you're asking yourself is, was it disconnected before the shechita, in which case it would be not kosher, or did it become dislodged from the jaw sometime after shechita, in which case the shechita was valid, and then subsequently if you have a shechted animal whose esophagus disconnected, it's not a problem. So Rav paskind that if you have both a dislodged and a shechted veshet, then obviously it's kosher. Why? Because it's impossible that you would have a shmuta that is also shchuta. Why? Because had the esophagus become dislodged from the jaw, from the beis alechi, before the shchita, what would have happened? It would have dropped down in the animal because there's nothing holding it up anymore. It would dislodge. And then when the shofet came and does the shchita, there's no longer a veshet there for him to even shecht. So therefore, it can only be, if you find that the veshet is shechted and dislodged, it can only be that it became dislodged afterwards. So Reish Lakish, now remember, this is Rav, the great Rav that everyone's saying is so great. This was something he said. I remember he was a good guy. Okay, so that is Reish Lakish. Reb Yochanan Omer, but this is going back, this memra where Rav said it's for sure kosher, and this is interesting because Reb Yochanan himself, who praised him, argued with Rav. He said, Omer, Yavo V'yakif. He should come and he should compare. Now, if you remember, we had on a few days ago on Daf Nun, we said that the Makifim B'nei Ma'ayim, that you can compare the B'nei Ma'ayim, that you can compare the Reyes, and we talked about different ways that basically the idea is you take another animal that's shechted or some other way of checking, and you compare what's going on here in order to figure out what's happening. So basically the idea in this case is that according to the way Rashi understands, Rashi says, yechatchena b'makom acher. So what do? You take that same veshet that's been shechted and you cut it, in another place further down on the esophagus. Im domim mareim shelchatachim, if the two cuts look the same, so then it's trefa. Why? Because the second cut you did was obviously done after the esophagus was disconnected, because we have already said that the esophagus was disconnected. So if that cut that we just did with the esophagus surely disconnected looks the same as the cut that was there from previously, it would tell you that these were both the same kind of cut, and both of them happened after the esophagus was dislodged, in which case this would be a trefa. On the other hand, if the second cut you make looks different than the first cut, and the general understanding is that the first cut was more red. So what I would tell you, it had more chiyus, and it had, in other words, it was a living animal when it was cut, versus this one was cut when it was no longer living. That Rashi says, the hovadomen yeshlomer sha'af chata harishan la'achar ikor nasa. So Rashi would say that if they look the same, then you have to be concerned that both of them were done after the esophagus was dislodged. Now, not everyone agrees with Rashi's way of understanding. So Tosfos, first of all, brings the Baal Halachas Gedolos. I think this was Tosfos was on in the first parak on Daf Tes. So there they talk about the fact. The question is, Rashi learns that when the veshet is disconnected, the issue is one of trefa. The Halachas Gedolos learns that it's an issue of halacha lo moshe misinai. And so the issue is, if it's a trefa, so it's a physical fact in the animal, then examining the colors, should work. But if it's just halacha lo moshe misinai, so then what kind of exam do you have going on here? So therefore, they would understand that rather what was happening is that they would bring another animal, not cut a second cut in the veshet. They would see the difference if you have a veshet that was cut after you would disconnect the esophagus and you would cut it. And then you would see, does it look the same as the first one? So in other words, unlike Rashi, who says you're comparing on the same animal, then according to Halachas Gedolos, we'd have to say that you're comparing across two animals. Now this obviously raises the issue which the Rishonim ask on this Halachas Gedolos that we learned before when we were talking about Chulya, about the vertebrae. It doesn't work to compare sometimes from one to another, much less to another animal. So how do you compare? So they answer that really, the Halachas Gedolos, if this is what we're saying, the comparison, that really the agrees with Rav's basic halacha, that you just check, that is there a shechted veshet? And obviously the veshet was there, just he wants this added element of doing that comparison. The Ran brings down also something a little bit different. So we've been saying generally that what you're comparing is the appearance of the veshet when it's been cut. The Ran would say, yes, we're looking at the appearance, but not how red it is. Rather, the Ran says what we're looking at is how straight is the cut. Why? Because if you have a veshet that's connected, so it's taut. And if it's taut, when you cut it, it's a straight cut. On the other hand, if the veshet is flopping around, even though it somehow stayed up there, it didn't drop down, but when you would do the shechita and you'd cut through the veshet, it would be floppy, and that would create a not so straight cut. So the Ran says that's what you would be looking at if you were doing it, which also answers up some of these other questions about how the comparison might work. So then the comparison might be the same, even within the way Rashi learns within the veshet. You could say that you just make a cut further down and you make a floppy cut and look, does it compare to a straight cut that was the first one? Okay, so in any event, all of this was brought really just to remind Reish Lakish about Rav's halacha. And one more thing related to this, Amar of Nachman, Lo Shanu Elo Shelo Tafas B'Simanim, that when do we say that this is true? And by the way, this is also one of the things that makes it easier to understand with the Ran. He says, when do we say that it's true that you can compare and decide, was it good? Is that if you're not holding on to the simanim. But if you are holding on to the simanim, right, so then it's an issue, because what was Rav's basis for saying that it's automatically kosher is because if the veshet would have been disconnected, it would have fallen down and there wouldn't be a shafted veshet. But if you're holding up the simanim with your hand, so then obviously there's no proof from the fact that the veshet was shechted, because maybe it was disconnected, and the only reason it was shechted was because you were holding your hand up there. So there's the Rishonim, the Rambam, the Rash, but they all talk about different ways, or from them, you see different ways of understanding whether Rav Nachman was coming to argue on Rav Yochanan, or he was coming to clarify Rav Yochanan's position. But in any event, all of this was to remind Rav Yochanan, reminding Reish Lakish who he was. Reish Lakish remembered this memra, so therefore he brought it down. Okay, we're almost finished with this Mishnah that we started Elu Treifus. So the end of the Mishnah said Zeh Aklal. Then and basically at the end of on Membeis, at the end of the Mishnah, we summed it all up by saying Zeh Aklal, that anything Kol She'en Kamo Chaya Treifa, that anything that like this can't live, that's a treifa, right? So there's kind of we listed a bunch of things that they can't live with, and then we said at the end, a general rule. So we know that when you say a zeh klal at the end, it's coming to add something. So ask the Gemara, zeh klal asui emai, what's it coming to include? So we say, lasui shav shmaitza, it's coming to include the seven shmaitzas or sayings. So what is this? So that, if you remember, on daf Membeis, we had a series of Amorayim, who said things that they thought were also we referenced the Shev Shmaitza. You had Rav Masna, you had Rachish Bar Papa, Mishmei the Rav, you had Rav Avira, Mishmei the Rav, you had a bunch, you had seven Amorayim who are adding cases that they considered Trefa. So therefore, when the Mishnah says, Zeh HaKlal, that anything that's not going to live is a Trefa, what was it really coming to include? It was coming to include all those seven cases of the various Amorayim. Debay Yosef Rishpa Machu Begida Begida Nashaya Vekatle. So Yosef was a hunter, and the people in his hunting party, what they had a practice that they would hit the Gid Anasha. Rashi says either with a Bechitim Obamakal, they would shoot an arrow at the Gid Anasha, or they would hit the Gid Anasha of the animal, the Katli, and they would kill the animal. So what happened? So they came in front of Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira. So what were they coming to ask him? Because the question is as follows. Since they saw that if you hit the get anasha, the animal dies, so you should say once you hit the get anasha, it becomes a trefa. And if it becomes a trefa because it's going to die, so then you shouldn't be able to eat it, even if you were to shecht it between the time that you hit the get anasha and it actually dies, because since it's going to die, you should say it's a trefa. So they came in front of Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira, Amar lahu, and he said to them, V'chila hosef ala trefas yesh. He says, "Ein lecha el masha manu chachamim." He says, "Are you coming to add to the list of trefas? It doesn't work like that. What the chachamim establish as the trefas, those are the trefas. Anything beyond that is not a trefa, and therefore hitting the git anasha is not making it a trefa." The Gemara will ask in a minute, "What about the fact that it kills them?" And we say that something that kills an animal makes it a trefa. We'll discuss that in a minute. Just want to say another story first. The Gemara says. The Bach says the Bay Rav Papa Bar Abba Rishba Machu Bechulya Vekatli. Rav Papa Bar Abba was also a hunter, and they didn't hit to get anasha. What they would do is they would shoot an arrow at the chulya, at the kidneys. Rashi says Makin Bechetz Hachaya Bechulya Se Milmala. So basically, they would shoot an arrow at the kidneys, and Rashi's pointing out they have to be very careful to get it at the top of the kidneys, because otherwise, if they weren't careful, they would cause a piercing in the Beis HaChollel, which would in turn make it a trefa for a different reason. But the kidneys itself, if the kidneys have, and where are the kidneys are basically right beneath the sedra, right beneath the spine, just past where the ribs are, where the tzalos are, that's where all the way at the top is where the kidneys were. So the idea is they would shoot an arrow at the kidneys. That would be a way of killing the animal without causing it to become to pierce the abdominal cavity, which would make it a chollel. But in any event, what do you see? You see that when they would shoot a kidney, that the kidney would die. So they wanted to know, maybe this makes it a trefa.
Why did they have to bother with that if it wasn't?
No, that's what I said before. In other words, the question is, if they decided that sometime between the time it was shot and the time it actually died, they wanted to shecht it and eat it. That's what Rashi says in Rashi Asu Lukame. He says lishol in yishchatua achar amake mahu, that if they were to shecht it after the make but before it died, yeah. So, obviously, if that were to make it a trefa, they would want to shecht. If we make it a trefa, it wouldn't help to shecht. But they wanted to know, could they shecht at that point, if they wanted to actually eat the animal, as opposed to whatever else they might do with it if it wasn't shechted. Okay, so also the coming to Rav Abba, they came in front of Rav Abba. Amar lahu, he said to them, v'chila hosef ala trefas yesh, ein lechel masha manu chachamim. He says, you think you can come and add to the trefas? You can't. Only what the chachamim establish as the trefas. Now this, by the way, is an issue. Generally, regardless of what modern science tells us, we don't add trefas, and nor do we subtract trefas. If our science develops that we see something different, we still go with the original list that were there. But in any event, ask the Gemara, v'hakach hazinon de kamesa. So he said, but 1 second, why is it not a trefa? At the end of the day, if every time they would shoot the arrow at the kidney or they would hit the get anasha, it would die. So it should be a trefa because the Mishnah says, the aklau, anything that can't live is a trefa. So the Gemara says, "Gemiri di badri lo samachaya." We had a tradition that in those instances, if you would put on some kind of medicine, then in fact it would not die. So, for example, if you pierced the kidney but then put on this medicine, or you hit the get anasha and put on medicine, so then it would get better. So that tells you that a trefa, it's not just that it's going to die, but it's that it's going to die without the opportunity to fix it. This gets into an interesting question. It has to do with something we discussed. We learned on Mem Gimel, which has to do with the question of whether a scab covering over something can heal it. So that gets into this question of whether there's a concept of healing, and that's why partially we learn why the reason a scab doesn't work is because it's not going to stay on. But in theory, but not everyone agrees with that. But in theory, you would have the question otherwise as if a scab can actually heal it. Don't you see that you can heal a trefa? But that's part of a broader sugya. We're not going to get into it now. It says the Mishnah, the eluk sheres bebehema. So we started the parak by saying eluk trefas. These are things that make an animal a trefa, and we're saying these are things that don't make an animal trefa. So what are those? Nikva hagargeres, oshen nistika So you have the gargaris is another word for the veshet. It's the esophagus. So if it gets another word for the trachea, that if the trachea gets a hole or it gets cracked, Rashi explains what does it mean that it gets cracked. It means that it's cut on its la'arka, on its length, meaning top to bottom. As long as there's some connection, the trachea is intact at the top and the bottom of the cut, and the trachea is still there, then it's okay if it's cut on a vertical axis. So now, at kama techzer, now at a certain point, it can be cut or have a hole, but if it's missing a certain amount of the trachea, then it becomes a trepha. So the question is, how much can you be missing and it still be considered a kosher trachea? Rav Shimon Gamliel says, ad ke iser ha'italki. Until an iser, a italki, an Italian iser. Now we encounter this many times in Shas. We encountered it at the beginning in the first parak of Chulin, and the poskim don't exactly know the exact size of this. They have a sense of relative measure, but they don't necessarily know the exact size. But we're going to see later that there are some substitutes that can answer the question for us. Oh, nifchasa hagogoles v'lo nikiv krum shamoach. Now another case where it's kosher is you could have where the skull has deteriorated, but it is not yet, it has not caused a piercing in the moach, the krum shamoach, which is the membrane that surrounds the brain. So as long as the membrane that surrounds the brain is intact, the fact that some of the skull has become disintegrated or missing is not a problem. We'll see though later that there is a shear at a certain point at which it's missing that you would in fact it would be a trefa. Nikav halev velola beis chalalo. If you have a heart, and we had the opposite case that we learned before, that this is talking about if there's a piercing in the heart, but it doesn't go to the beis chalalo, which is its cavity. What's this? Presumably a reference to the two ventricles. So you had something that went in, but it didn't reach all the way to the interior. That's not a trefa. Nishbra asadra v'lo nifsaka chutshela. If you have the bones of the spine have been broken, but the spinal cord that's in it has not, that's not a trefa. Nitla hakaved v'nishdayer himena kazayis. That if you have the liver, it has mostly been taken out, but it remains in it enough. The size of a kazayas, that's not going to be a trefa because the liver can regenerate himself. Hamseis ubeis hakosos. So the hamseis is the third of the stomach. So we know that the first stomach, the keres, would be where the food would sit. It would make its way down to the beis hakosos, which was the second stomach, which would turn it into a cud. The cuds will go back to the animal when we say choose its cud, it means to choose what comes out of the beis hakosos. It then comes back down, and having already been re-chewed cud, would proceed to the third stomach, which is the hamseis. So now, the hamseis and the beis hakosos, as being the second and third stomachs, are obviously next to each other and connected. But the issue is as follows, that they were actually physically proximate. Within that physical proximity, there was an opening, obviously, inside, because otherwise, how did the food get from the second stomach to the third stomach? So what the mission is saying here is, let's say there becomes a new hole in the hamseis and in the beis hakosos, and those holes are opposite each other in a place where the hamseis and beis hakosos are actually touching each other. So now what do you end up with? You end up with two avenues for food to go from the beis hakosos to the hamseis. So that's not a problem, says the Mishnah, because at the end of the day, it's serving the same function. So that's what it means when it says, hamseis ubeis hakosos shenikvu zelatozeh, that if you have the hamseis and beis hakosos get a new hole, but they're all that happens is the food from the beis hakosos goes into the hamseis, so then it's not a problem. Nitol atchol, if the spleen of the animal was removed, that does not make it into a trefa. Nitlu hakloyas, that if the kidneys were taken out, if the kidneys were taken out, that it does not make it a trefa. Now, for those of you who have this book, the Tumun Echol, so if you look in the back, there's actually a fascinating thing because people struggled a lot with the fact that that how could you say that an animal could live without its kidneys? Kidneys serve a certain function. So he describes in the back a whole thing that at a certain point many poskim gave up. They said they don't understand how that works. And then they found a study of more recent years where it describes in great detail exactly, they did a test and they determined that certain of these animals, ruminating animals, which are animals that chew their cud, have an ability that the keres can at some level serve some of the functions of a kidney. So they found this to be in a, you know, then this is a scientific study. It wasn't, you know, they saw based on that there's an idea that they talk about the fact it makes the animal anorexic a little bit. So I don't know if it could last 12 months, but in theory, you find an instance where these kind of animals, in fact, could, the ruminating animals could survive without a kidney. It's relatively short and it's interesting to read. In any event, nitol lechi atachton. Now, if the lower part of the jaw gets taken, that does not make it a trefa. Now, this should ask, get you into real question, because we've learned that if you have the veshet, that if the veshet gets disconnected from the lower jaw, so then it's a trefa. So how could you say that if the lower jaw gets taken away, it's not a trefa? So I think this is what Rashi was trying to address. Rashi says, "Nitol lechi atachton me'ala basar vasimanim mechubarim bebasar." He's saying, the lechi atachton, the jaw had some meat, and basically you withdrew the jaw, but the simanim were still connected to the meat. So Rashi's saying that's sufficient, because when do we say it's a trefa? Is it gets disconnected altogether? As long as the veshet and the kana are still connected to the meat of the lechi atachton, if the lechi atachton itself is taken out, it does not make it into a trefa. Nitl ha'em shalah, that if you have the uterus of the animal gets taken, that's not a trefa. V'charusa bidei shamayim. This is an interesting case. So Rashi says, Mefarsh b'gemara, we're going to see Meretz Hashem tomorrow, Shetzimka Reya Shelah, that its lung dried up, but Dafka specifically bidei shamayim. If this happened by some natural occurrence, Kigon Shenivasa may kol ram uvrakim, because it got afraid of like thunder and lightning, something happened naturally. Where does this word charusa come from? Rashi says charusa, that when it gets dried up, it becomes kasha kechorias dekel. It becomes hard like the branches of a palm tree. So that's this language of charusa. So the Gemara is going to talk about how do you know when you look at the animal if it got dried up because it got scared of thunder and lightning or it got scared of a person. But anyway, we'll see that in Meretz Hashem tomorrow. Continues the Mishnah, hagluda. Case of gluda is what? Rashi says, shenitol ora, that it lost its skin. How? O machmas shchin, o machmas malacha. Either it got worked to a point that it lost its skin, or it had boils, and the boils caused the skin to come off. V'lonishtayer klum, and it didn't have any skin left. So that gets into a machlokas. Rameir machshav chacham posel. Rameir says that's kasher, it's not a trefa, and the chachamim say it's pasel until you get some more skin on it. Rashi says that the Gemara is going to discuss how much needs to remain from the skin that it should be kasher according to the chachamim. Okay, says the Gemara. Itma Reb Yochanan Amar Elu Trefus Dafka Reb Shimon Ben Lakish Amar Elu Tref Elu Ksheres Dafka. Okay, so what's going on here? So we just did a Mishnah that starts the Elu Ksheres Bebehema. These are the ones that are kosher in a behema. How did we start the perek? We said Elu Trefus. These are the ones that are trefus. So the question is, normally when you say Elu, it's a miyot. It's saying these are the ones that fit in the category and not some other one or ones, right? So the question is as follows. So we see that both the Elu Trefus and Elu Ksheres both use the language of Elu. One of them we're saying is coming to exclude something, and the other is just there for stylistic symmetry, so that you use the same phrasing. So this gets into Machlokas, Rish Lakish, and Reb Yochanan. Reb Yochanan says that Elu Trefus is Dafka. It's saying these are the ones that are Trefus, and this other thing is not a Trefa. Versus Reish Lakish is saying Elu Ksheres Dafka, these are the ones that are kosher, which is saying as this thing from another one is not kosher, it's a trefa. So we're gonna see, so they have competing or dueling inferences depending on which one you think is the primary one and which one is just stylistically similar. So now the Gemara goes on, B'maiko Miflagi, what are they arguing about? They're arguing about but the Rav Masna. Rav Masna. Now Rav Masna, I mentioned it in passing before, Rav Masna was one of the seven, the Shev Shmaitza. He was the first one. So they argue about this case. Amar Rav Masna. Rav Masna says, "Hai buka da atma." This buka is like a ball, a rounded joint. We talked about this yesterday in the context, or the day before, I don't remember, in the context of the chulya, of the vertebrae, that the way the ribs attach into the vertebrae, it's a ball and joint. So that is, that's what we're talking about here, that the thigh bone also has a ball on the top, deshaf miduchte, which slipped out of its place. According to Rav Masna, that is a case of trefa. So Rabbi Yochanan Amar, so here's how Rabbi Yochanan learns. He says, Elu trefos dafka. He says that when the first Mishnah is the primary one, and it was coming to say, Elu trefos, these are the trefos, and other ones are not tref. So Tana trefos, Vatana Zaklau. So which are the ones that are trefos? They are the ones that are expressly listed in the Mishnah, as well as the ones included by Zaklau, which we just finished saying, were the Shev Shmaitza, were the seven Amoraic statements. Now here's the issue. Included in the seven statements is Rav Masna's halacha. So basically Rav Yochanan was saying as follows. When the Mishnah says, Elu trefas, these are trefas, saying these are the trefas and not others. And then it's coming, and which are these? These are the ones listed in the Mishnah plus the seven. And it's coming to exclude a different one that is kosher. Okay, so then what happens? The chazil the Rav Masna, the asya b'zeh aklal. But when Rav Yochanan meant that included in the Mishnah is the Mishnah's things plus the Amoraic statements, he was only including six of the Amoraic statements. He did not include Rav Masna. Why? And because, we're going to see in a minute, but he saw that V'chazil of Rav Masna, the Asya B'Zeh Klal, he was worried, people are going to say, Zeh Klal doesn't tell you six, seven, eight, ten. It's saying these are the ones that are included, the Amoraic statements. So he realized, you might actually think there's seven. Really, there's only six. So he says, why did he not like Rav Masna's halacha to say that it's a trefa? He says, my time, he says, why would you include it? The damyal in a tule. It's because it's similar to a case, of where things get removed. What's the primary case of removal? In the Mishnah, we learned that if the liver gets removed, the animal's a trefa. So he's saying, you might say, just like a liver that gets removed is a case of, and we talked about before, there's seven different types of issues with trefas. So Natula, where something is taken out, is one of them. So you might say, just like a liver that gets taken out is a problem of trefa, so too a thigh bone that slips out should also be a case of a trefa. So therefore, Tana, they learn, Elu trefas, Hani hu de tarfa, hadra masna kshera. So he says, no, that's why I said, Elu trefas, these are the trefas to tell you, even though you might think that Rav Masna should be included as a trefa, it's not. And Rav Masna's case is kosher. So therefore, according to Rav Yochanan, when the Mishnah lists its trefas, and then the Amoraim come and do it, he buys six out of seven. So, but he doesn't buy Rav Masna. And therefore he understands that Elu trefas, these are the trefas, are these 18 plus 6, and not the seventh one that you might have thought to include. Rav Shimon Lakish says, no, Elu Ksheras Dafka, our Mishnah on Dafnun Dalad is the one that's specific. And it's saying, Elu Ksheras, these are the ones that are kosher, excluding a different one that's going to be Trefa, which is that? So Tana, we learned Tana Trefa, so Tana Zaklal. That we know that the what are included according to Reish Lakish, the Trefas listed in the first Mishnah on Membeis, and the Zaklal, which adds the seven. And he saw that there were the Tana saw that you might not include the case of Rav Masna, right? So, and obviously Rav Masna was an Amora. All of these were Amorayim, but the idea is that the cases that they talked about were ones that the Tana was including in Zeh Klal. So Reish Lakish says the Tana saw that if all I wrote was Zeh Klal, you might have only included six, and you wouldn't have included Rav Masna. My Taima, why would you not have included it? You say, lavlin a kuvi damya, because it's not similar to any other trefas. It's not similar to a flaw in that something is pierced, because there's nothing pierced when the thigh bone slips out. Velola pasuke damya, it's not similar to something that got cut off, because nothing got cut off here. It's whole, it just slipped out. Ulinatule nami lo damya, it's not similar to something taken out, because natule is a reference to, like, if the whole liver got taken out. In this case, it's true that it slipped out of its joint, but it didn't get taken out of the animal. So says Reish Lakish, the Tana realized that people might think that Rav Masna's case of the thigh that slips out is not a case of trefa. So therefore, Tanu Eluk Sheros, Hani Hudik Sheros, Hadra Masna Trefa. So they said, only these that are listed in the Mishnah on Daf Nun Dalet are Ksheros, But the case of Ramasna is actually a trefa. So it comes out. So they're each coming to exclude something. Rabbi Yochanan understood that the Elu Trefas at the beginning of this parak was coming to exclude Rav Masna, because Rav Masna, he held, is not a case of trefa, it's a case of kshera. Reish Lakish held the opposite. He said, our Mishnah said, Elu ksheiras, these are the ones that are kosher, but not another one which is not kosher, it's a trefa. What's that? That's the case of Rav Masna, because he would say, that's included in Zal Klal. You might have thought it's not similar. It is similar, and that's why our Tana felt the need to say Elu ksheiras. Okay, Gufa. So now that we've been talking about Rav Masna, let's talk about Rav Masna. Halacham Rav Masna, Hai Buka Da Atma Deshaf Miduch De Trefa. Rav Masna says, as we've been discussing, that if the ball, the round part at the end of the bone slips out of its socket, then that's a Trefa. V'Rava Amar Kshera. Rava argues on Rav Masna and says it's kosher. V'Ifzik Nive Trefa. However, if it is if there it's severed, the nivim, what are those? Then it's trefa. So now, the way Rashi learns nive is, let me just find it. Nive, gid sheberosho shemechuber b'chur v'katan humod. He's saying there's this little tendon or ligament, something that connects in the ball. You have the ball and you have the socket. In the ball, in the socket, there's a gid that attaches the round part to the actual socket. And the idea, Rashi says, is if it slips out, since it's a very small ligament or tendon or whatever it is, it's gonna be sliced, and that's gonna make it a trefa. The Rambam learns differently. He learns that there was out on the outside, there were the nivim that were like these fibrous things that connected the hip bone to the socket to the ball. But in any case, whatever these nivim are, if those get torn, then it's in fact a trefa. The hilchos, so what's the halacha? Ifsik namik shera adamis achla asachule. He says, no, even if it gets severed, that's not a problem. It's only a problem if it becomes spoiled. Mizakel nirkav, it rots, says Rashi. So then that's indicative of a problem that creates a trefa. But if simply the ball and the socket lose their ligament or tendon, that does not make it a trefa. It's only if that ligament becomes rotten. Okay, so now we said ad kama tachzor. So we were talking about the fact that we have a trachea. The trachea, we said, as long as it's just a pinprick or it's a vertical axis, it's okay. We said, but at what point does it become a problem that it becomes a trefa if you're missing too much of the trachea? So Amar Ziri, so we said it's a isari talkia. Amar Ziri said, atun, you, delomischame lechun shiura, Rashi says, I've never seen Shalori Isam Isar Italki Miamechem, you've never seen an Italian Isar. So Shiure Bidinra Kurdina. It is its shear is the dinner of Kardu. So Rashi says that is that's something that he says also Hayamakirim, people would recognize that Umehare Ararat, who that this was Hare Ararat. Hare Ararat we know is where the table landed. It's somewhere in the very northeastern corner of Turkey, maybe in Armenia. Possibly I saw some discussion of whether this is the area that the Kurds occupy, but nowadays the Kurds go almost up to, they have a little piece in Armenia and they go up to the border. So I'm not sure if that's where it's the Kurdina is the Kurds or not, but in any event, it's somewhere roughly in that area of the world. Rashi says people were familiar with the dinner kordina. And so in case you weren't familiar with that, it says, Vahavi kipshita zutrasa, that it's like the small pshita, umishtakha beni pshite de pumpadisa. It says that, these were the small coins of pumpadisa. So if you didn't know what a isari talki looks like, then it looks like a dinar kordina, and if you didn't know what that looks like, it looks like a pumpadisa coin, and if you don't know what that looks like, you're out of luck. But such it is. And I referenced before, the poskim actually don't know exactly the size of an isari talki, but presumably they knew some of these coins. Rav Chana was a psoira, who's a money changer. Shulchani Haya, Rashi says, he had lots of coins in front of him. So he says, Ilamina Yavekai Barnafcha. That Barnafcha is a reference to Rabbi Yochanan, that Rabbi Yochanan was standing, I looked up and Rabbi Yochanan was standing above me at my money changing table. Why did Rabbi Yochanan come to his money changing table? He said, can I have a Kurdish coin or whatever so that I could check a trefa? Because we just finished saying that's the size that it needs to be. So Rabbi Yochanan was coming to get it. And I wanted to stand up in front of him. He didn't let me. Amrli, he said to me, Shev bini Shev, sit my son, sit. Don't stand up for me. Why? Because ain bali umnis rashayin lamo b'nei tamidei chachamim b'shasha oskim b'malachtam. Because workers, when they're doing their work, are not allowed to stand up in front of a Talmud Chacham. So now, Rashi, the way Rashi understands this is that we have to be talking about a guy who, in other words, because Rashi is very focused on the fact that he says he's not allowed to get up. Rabbi Yochanan told him, you're not allowed to get up. What kind of business? Why are you not allowed to get up for a Talmud Chacham? So Rashi therefore understands that we have to be talking about someone who's working for someone else. Rashi describes that they used to have an arrangement. Someone would give him the coins and stuff, say, here, you go be the money changer, and we'll split the profits 50-50, right? So therefore, he's obligated, according to the way Rashi describes it, he has to be looking all the time for potential customers. And if he's busy standing up for a Talmud Chacham, then he's not going to be doing his job, and therefore he's not allowed to stand up for a Talmud Chacham. That's Rashi, the way Tosas understands it. Tosas says, well, he understands why Rashi says that. He says it's possible. He also brings proof that sometimes Einar Rashoi, which Rashi understood to say you're not allowed to stand up, could also be that you don't have to stand up, right? So therefore, Tosa says it could be that even if you're your own guy, you're not working for someone else, you don't have to stand up. It's not your obligation to stand up. So now this gets into a whole interesting kinds of topics. But the Ran actually says a different reason why you shouldn't. He says even if you want to learn Einar Rasha, you're not allowed to. It could even be you're not allowed to if you're at your own table. Why? Because since other people might be working for someone else and they're not going to stand up, and you're the guy that's going to stand up for Talmud Chacham, you're going to make everyone else look bad. And Mimela, you're going to be Mavaza the Talmud Chacham. Why? Because you're going to stand up as if that's what you're supposed to do. The others who are working for someone else aren't able to stand up, and it's going to look like they're not being Mechabit the Talmud Chacham. So the Ran says, that's why you can't do it. The Shulchan Aruch paskins like Tosfos. He says, if you're your own guy, you can stand up. You don't have to. If you're not your own guy, you can't stand up. He doesn't bring the Shita of the Ran. It's interesting. The Shach paskins by that a Talmud Chacham should try not to go in a room where everyone's going to have to stand up if he could avoid it, because you're being matriarch people. And the Aruch HaShulchan explains, though, he says that that's true. That's not true nowadays. It was true in the past because how do people sit in the past? They would sit on the floor. So to stand up from the floor is a big interruption. But to stand up the way we do on a chair, and you stand up like this for 1 second, is not a problem. So he's going to say the halacha doesn't work like that. Now here's another thing that interestingly in the Tshuvas Gedolos and others, they talk about the fact that this idea that if you work for someone else, you can't even take the time to stand up, it doesn't apply nowadays. In other words, because nowadays, employers don't expect, in the age of the internet and distraction and smartphones, they don't expect you to pay attention all day. And therefore, you would be, even if you were working for someone else, you would be able to stand up. They said, but he says, where would you not be able to stand up? For example, I saw this brought in Pnina Halacha. So he's saying, like, for example, if you're putting holes in pearls to make a necklace, or you're a sofer who needs to be working very closely, and then you're disrupting your whole work to stand up, that's a problem, and then you wouldn't be able to do it. But just to stand up, even if you're working for someone else, you can make these momentary disruptions, even if you're not relying on the Aruch HaShulchan, then nowadays it's not a disruption to stand up. Okay, in any event, so now the Gemara says, Velo, is it true that you can't stand up for Talmud Chacham while you're doing your work? We learned in a Mishnah, in Bikurim, which says, Kol Bali Umnias Umdim Pneim Vishalom Bashlomom. So this is talking about the people who had come up to Eretz Yisrael, who were bringing Bikurim, that all of the workers would stand up in front of them and they would ask them, how you doing? They would give them Shalom Aleichem. V'omron Lehem, and they would say to them, Achenu Anshe Mokum Ploni Boyachem B'Shalom, so-and-so who's coming from this town, welcome to come in peace. So Rabbi Yochanan says, so the question is, if you stand up for the people who are bringing the Bikurim, you should for sure stand up for a Talmud Chacham. To which Rabbi Yochanan says, no, not necessarily. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Mipneim omdim, mipnei Talmud Chacham ein omdim. No, you should stand up in front of it only says you should stand up in front of the people bringing Bikurim. It doesn't say you should stand up in front of Talmud Chachamim. So this is not a very good question. So I'm Rabbi Yossi bar Oven, okay. So then if that's true, that it's specifically you stand up for the people who are bringing Bikurim and you don't stand up for the people who are Talmidei Chachamim. So, Bore, Kam Chaviva Mitzvah B'Shaito, that you see how important is a mitzvah in its right time, Shahari Mipneim Omdim, Mipneim Talmidei Chachamim Ein Omdim. So you should see that how important is Bikurim and doing a mitzvah at the right time. I'm not sure if he's saying all mitzvahs or this mitzvah particularly, we'll see in a second, the Rabbeinu Gershom, but, he says, you see that this is a really special mitzvah. So Gemara says, not necessarily, mimai. Dilma kadesha tolo tehe nimtza machshilin lasid lovo. Because maybe the halacha of the ole bikurim in particular is something that generally you don't stand up for anyone, not for regular mitzvah, not for talmud chacham, but for the ole bikurim you would. Why? Because you don't want them to not come next time. Because it's a big deal to bring bikurim. And you want them to feel good. We saw a similar concept in Beis Yisak, that when we learned in Rosh Hashanah that the Edom would come, you would give them a good meal because you wanted them to come next time they saw the moon. So same thing, you'd make them feel good when they came, the Ole Bikurim, so that they would come again. But that doesn't prove that it's more important than rising for a Talmud Chacham. So, interesting thing, if you take a quick look at the Rabbeinu Gershom, on the right, different Gemaras, different places, but, he says, you would stand up in front of these people. Kobali umnis omdim mipnei v'sholom v'shlom. And he says, kolom arminin and hasim v'sechas tainas. Gonvei ali v'koitze ketzios. So he says as follows, that the people who steal a pestle or cut ketzios, that all the kobali umnis omdim mipnei v'sholom. He says that's the case that you should stand up in front of them. Umahein gonvei ali. What's this case of the people who would steal the pestle, so to speak? So he says, "Gaza Yeravam Rasha Shlo Yehi Shum Bar Adam Sheyolch Bikurim LeYushalayim." Then in the days of Yeravam, although the way he's understands Yeravam is the one who actually did this, maybe it was just like Yeravam did it also that they didn't want them to be Olo Regel. Well, so what would they do? They wanted to bring Bikurim. Vayanotun Aliu Bikurim Besocho. They would take a pestle. And they would take the bikurim, the fresh fruits with it. And what would they do? On top of the fresh fruits, Yalei and Ketzios, they would put like these figs. When he would get to the guards that Yeravam set up to say you couldn't go. So Omren, Lehechon Atan Hochin, where are you going? So Omren, Lasa Shnei Yigule Dvelo V'machtei Shalofenenu. We're just going a little bit further. We're going to create these figs that they spread over the Bikurim. They said, we have these figs because we're going to make it into fig cakes at the press. When they passed the guards, and they would take out the bikurim fruits, they would put them in baskets, and they would go on to Yushalayim. Same thing happened with the woods that were needed for the mizbeach. They would take the wood and craft it into ladders. Kishmagin etzel pars dos, when they get to the guards, omrin la'ana atam hochun, they say, where are you going? V'omrin la'havi shnei gozos m'shevo shalofneinu. We need this ladder because we're going to get the birds from the coop. So he says, umipneim omdim bali umnes. So the Rabbeinu Gershom is saying, why would we stand up in front of the people? It's because these were people who sacrificed to be able to do the mitzvah of Bikurim. So, velohi, he says, but it's not so, elekadesh lehe machshil and lasid lovo. It's only so that they shouldn't be machshil in the future. Kolomer, ein osan lan kavod yosemi tamu chacham. They're not more important than a tamu chacham, and you wouldn't give them kavod. In other words, the thought was, since they sacrificed so much that they're more important than a tamu chacham, he says they're not. Elekadesh lehe machshil and lasid lovo, shiubon bepa macher, just so they would come another time. It's worth saying, because the Gemara over there, if you remember in Tainus, says that this is Mekuyim, the Pasuk, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, if you talk about these people, as opposed to Yeravam, who's Shem Rishayim Yerkov. So we'll mention it. In any event, that's the Rabbeinu Gershom's understanding. But we see that the reason you didn't stand up in front of them was specifically because you wanted them to come in the future. Amar Rav Nachman, Kisela Kiyaser Michisela, Chiiser Kiyaser Michiiser. So he says as follows that we just learned that if you have a trachea, if it gets a hole the size of a sela, then it's a trefa. And similarly, you have the concept of an isar. You have you have in the case of as follows. You have a machlokas b'sham and b'Beis Hillel that is as follows. We talked about this yesterday or the day before. I don't remember. In the context of the chulya, that we talked about the fact that whether B'Beis Hillel held that one chulya, one vertebra missing is enough, and Beishami said it's two, and then they said that's also true by Trefas. So, if you remember, one was a Chumra, one was a Kula, because by what we said over there is where Beishami and Beishil argued in that case is because they were saying Beishami was Machmer, because he said as soon as you're missing one Chulya, then it's a Trefa, and Beishil said he had until two, so Beishil was Makel. But then when you reverse it to be a Trefa, so then you're saying according to Beis Hillel, you have a longer, it is still a trefa for longer. In any event, without getting into all the details, we have a similar concept here, where a different machlokas, that machlokas was in the context of, you have a shedra and a gulgolas have to be, in order to do tumas ol, the shedra has to be whole, or the skull has to be whole. As distinct from if you have majority of the bones or majority of the abdominal cavity, that's another way to have tumas ol. But the idea is that the skull and the spine need to be complete. So Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argue by the spine, is it one missing vertebrae, is it two? And in here, what they talk about, according to Beis Hillel, you need to, if it's taken out of the skull enough that if you took out that amount of a skull from a live person, he would die, then that is, then that is the amount that the skull is no longer considered a whole skull. And the Gemara says, and Rashi says, maybe a Brisa says, that that's a sela, right? And so then what happens here is that we're saying that Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel that this same halacha is true by a trefa, right? We had the same thing, Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, that these halachas that have to do with the gogolas or the sedra to tell you what makes it whole is the same thing that says what makes it into a trefa. Right? So therefore, we're saying as follows, that Rav Nachman is saying that when you have a shear of a sela in a trachea, or you have a shear of a isar in a skull, and you want to figure out, is it a trefa or not? So you have to figure out, does it have the size of an isar or a sela? So now we're going to say, Alma, so what he's basically saying is that if you have an isar in a trachea, that's as if you have something larger than an isar. So meaning, if you have precisely the size of an isar, then that's trefa, it's not kosher. And similarly, if you have precisely the size of that's if you have a sela, and if you have precisely the size of an isar missing from a skull, then that is going to make it into a trefa. So what do you see? This gets into the machlokos of ad v'ad b'chlal, or ad v'loy ad b'chlal. So the question is, as follows. The Alma Kasavar of Nachman, you see the Rav Nachman holds, Ad Veloy Ad Bechlal, that when it says until, because it says it's not a trefa until it has an isar, or until it has a sela, right? So you might understand that means if you have a sela, that's still covered that it's not a trefa. If you have an isar, it's still covered it's not a trefa. Or you could understand that it's until an isar or a sela, that once it hits an isar or a sela, it becomes trefa. So the question is, do you look at something, when you say something is until, do you look at it as ad va'ad b'chlal, meaning until this and including this, or do you look at it as until this and not including this? So the way Rav Nachman's learning, he's saying, if you have something that's exactly the size of a sela, or exactly the size of an isar, that's equivalent to being larger than a sela or larger than an isar. So he's saying, exactly a sela or an isar is going to be a trefa. So therefore, that seems that Rav Nachman is saying ad v'loy ad b'chlal, that the isar and the sela are not included in the measure. Esrei Rava l'Rav Nachman, Rava asked Rav Nachman, chevel yotzi min amita ad chamisha tfachim tahar. So How did they used to make beds? We've encountered this before. They used to string rope around some kind of frame, and then that's how they would make the bed. So what happened is he wrapped a bed with the rope, and the rope was hanging out some excess rope. Now, rope is not makabel toma because, as Rashi points out, you need taviv arig, it needs to be woven, and this is just, twisted. So in any event, the idea is that rope is not makabel toma, and here, if you have excess rope at the end, it's not helping the bed, so it's not part of the bed, and it's not big enough to do anything with it on its own. So therefore, it's tahar, right? So, we say, Chevel ayotzi min amita ad chamisha tvachim, until chamisha tvachim is tahar. So the Gemara says, my love chamisha kalamata. Doesn't that mean even if it's five, it's tahar? Now why do you assume that? Because as opposed to saying, ad chamisha tvachim, maybe what I think what they learn is that it should have maybe said ad tefech chamishi, right? Until the fifth tefach, which would be more clear. So if it says up to five, that's including five. Because if it wanted to say up to but not including five, it would say until the fifth tefach. So the Gemara says, lo, chamisha kilamala, you're assuming that, but I would tell you that no, five, when it says ad chamisha tefachim, it means until five but not including five, and above five is going to be tahar, at five is going to be tahar just like above five. So he says no proof from there. Tashma, same thing. The Mishnah continues, says, may hey v'yada sara tame. So now, if you had this long rope that was somewhere between 5 and 10 tefachim long, then it has a use. What's its use? Rashi points out that you have the Mishnah that tells you that zecher for the Karban Pesach, that you should take an animal and tie it to the end of your bed, even after Yetzias Mitzrayim, to remind you of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So now you see that this rope at the end of the bed has a function. So therefore it says from 5 to 10, it's tame, because once it has a function that's related to the bed, it becomes tame just like the bed itself. So the Gemara says, my love asara kolamata. So what about 10 itself? Isn't 10 like between 5 and 10 and it's going to be tame? Again, because I guess it should have said on ara tefecha asiri. So the Gemara says, lo, asara kilmalo, that if it's exactly 10, it's not like 5 to 10, it's like 10 and above, which is going to be tar. Why is it going to be tar? Because it's no longer there for the purpose of the bed, and it's usable for other things. Okay, but in any event, you see that there's no proof that Rav Nachman holds ad b'lo ad b'chal. Tashma, come in here. Hadakin shebechli cheres, hein v'karkaroi seyen, v'doif noiseyem, yoshrim b'loi mus, shalom yisomchon, shiurim b'chtei sichas katan. So he says as follows, that if you have a klei cheres, earthenware thing, so the question is, well, if you have a really small earthenware keli, or a karkaroi seyan is, Rashi says, is their shulayim, their bottom, the base of it. So you have a little bit of the base of a broken klei cheres, or you have the walls of a klei cheres. So it says, if they can sit without being otherwise supported, meaning that it's such that it can actually be a keli that can hold something. If it's round and it's just falling over, it doesn't help. But if it can sit on its own, so then the issue is that if there's a certain amount of liquid that it can hold, it's considered a keli, and it's makabel tuma. So we say as follows, that shiuram bechtei sichas katan, that the measure is, can it hold enough oil that you need in order to rub oil on a baby? Ve'ad log. And so if it's a small klei cheres, until it's a klei cheres the size of a lug, the measure is how much oil you need to smear on a baby or part of a baby. So the Gemara says, my love, lug kilmata. So when it says ad lug, doesn't it mean up until that amount, including that amount is it has this measure of a small amount of oil that you put on a baby. But that would tell you that a lug is like less than a lug. So therefore, you see that ad va'ad bechlal, because it includes a keli that is a lug worth, still has this measure. We're going to see in a minute, or not in a minute, we'll see tomorrow, Mitzvah Shem, that if it's a larger, if your original keli was larger, then you need more liquid in order to make it a thing. So here they're saying, up to a lug needs only the amount you need to anoint a baby. The amount you need to anoint a baby, isn't it true for a lug also? So you see, ad va'ad bechlal. So the Gemara says, lo, lug kilmala, that lug is like, so it's up until a lug, but a lug is like the next measure, which is going to require a larger measure than is required to smear on a baby.